show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, and of course, all across the nation and around the world. Thank you for joining us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. It's an honor and a pleasure to host each and every one of you at the Guy James Show today. We're going to have a good show for you today, and of course, that requires your participation. You can give us a call at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. No matter where you're listening, if you're on any of the very many chat rooms and websites that we're linked to, welcome. We're happy to have each. I've just gone over the list the other day and see how many people listen from each website and so forth. It's interesting to go over those particular figures. And no, I'm not going to share them with you. That's inside information. I do want to let you know that today we're going to have Robert Borisage with us. Robert is the president of the Institute for America's Future, and he's the co-director of its sister organization, the Campaign for America's Future. And of course, they have their big annual conference, Take Back America Conference, coming up June 18th, and I'll be there, and we'll bring our show to you from there for a couple of days, June the 18th, and that'll be all the presidential candidates show up to those things. They're a lot of fun. I also, and Robert will be with us at the bottom of this hour. Want to let you know that Cindy Sheehan will be with us tomorrow. What else have we got here? Oh, Medea Benjamin of Code Pink is going to be with us next Tuesday. And I guess that's as far out in the future as I ought to go with interviews. But a lot of you wrote and asked about certain people, getting them on the program, and we certainly do our best. And we talked to Medea last evening, and she said she'd be happy to be with us Tuesday. She would have been on today, but she's on an airplane right now flying. So that's what you do on an airplane is fly. And Cindy will be along with us tomorrow. So we look forward to talking to both of those guests and, of course, Robert Borisage at the bottom of the hour today. Serious business now. And I hope you can all be very, very serious for a moment. There's this Help Save Paris Hilton campaign going on. And I want to urge each and every one of you to go online. I don't have the website name, but there's a petition to try and save poor little Paris Hilton. Or you can call the governor's office. I meant to get his phone number, but it wouldn't be hard to find it out in California there for the governor and save this poor little waif from having to go to jail for 45 days where there isn't any champagne, there isn't any caviar, there's no nightclubbing, and Oh, my God, only one hot meal a day. A boiled egg and cereal for breakfast and a cold bologna sandwich for lunch. And a hot supper. Call Arnold. Call him today, please. And save Paris Hilton. My word. My goodness, what an awful thing that little Paris Hilton would have to go to jail for a few days. Got a nice note from Les, our good friend Les, a regular listener. He, going on to what we said about Republicans the other day, said from Credit Mobilier to the Gilded Age of McKinley to Teapot Dome to McCarthy to Watergate to Iran-Contra to today's maladministration, which has too many scandals to name, almost from its very conception, the Republican Party has been awash in scandal. So it has been, so it always shall be. They've produced nothing outside of Lincoln, Roosevelt the First, and possibly Eisenhower that did any good for any American, and I defy any of them to produce the first thing of lasting value that their party has ever given this nation, but I ain't holding my breath. Les. Thank you, Les. Love to get your emails on, get lots of them every day. I'd like to say a special hello to Francesca up in Nova Scotia. Francesca sent us a note requesting that we get Medea Benjamin on the show, and by golly, we've got it done. And also, I do want to mention that I received quite a lot of email yesterday concerning some things, some statements I made about Ronald Reagan. And I just want to say this to my Republican friends. You can scream all you want to about what I said, but I want you to know that I don't take a single word of it back. You may want to elevate the Gipper to sainthood and pronounce him as your greatest president ever after Honest Abe and name every damn thing in America after Ronnie the Saint Reagan. But I will continue to insist that the man was very bad for America and certainly no saint. He may have come across as some sort of congenial, nice old gentleman, but he wasn't what he appeared to be. And I know you don't like to hear that because, oh my word, Ronald Reagan, you bring up that name Ronald Reagan and they say it with reverence in the Republican Party. They almost fall to their knees and clasp their hands and have a look on their face as if it's a deity that we're talking about. And the sooner you can get over that, the better. The sooner you can face the facts about Ronald Reagan, the better off you will be. You should not go around in the United States of America with all these false notions in your mind of what someone was when that's exactly what they were not. Reagan's policies were terrible for America. The crap about him ending the Cold War is just that, crap. Many of his ideas were terribly harmful to America. You take his belief that the unfettered markets are unconditionally better than any alternative. That's one. The deregulation that he helped move along was a disaster. It led to trade that's full of inequities on both ends, and I'm not saying that he's the only one that had a hand in that. Certainly some Democrats did as well, but he really believed in it. It led to deregulated industries that have frequently grown more expensive and less responsive to consumers as a result. And if you don't believe that, take a look at your electric bill in many areas of the country. And he made ethnic hatred and greed the new hip and the new cool. And I understand that Republicans don't want to hear this about their hero. And I understand they didn't like me talking about it yesterday. And I understand that they don't like me talking about it again today. But I'm just answering the thoughts they put down in their email. They don't want to hear this about their hero. But it is not until the Reagan legacy is thoroughly discredited that we can stop getting presidents like W and deficits like the ones we have right now. People need to understand that. They need to accept the truth. They need to take their blinders off and take a good look at what the legacy of Ronald Reagan really was. And they've been so busy lately talking of Ronald Reagan, and we mentioned that a little bit yesterday about the so-called debate of the Republicans, and the so-called debate, to be fair here, that the Democrats had. But the Republicans, well, odd, you know, that's all they talked about was Ronald Reagan. Brought up the ghost of Ronald Reagan every chance they got. I don't recall hearing the Democrats talking over and over again about Franklin Roosevelt. I just heard them talking about things that the party stands for and they stand for. But all their candidates, the Republican candidates, want to claim the mantle of Reagan. And like I said, the truth of Reagan's record is far, far more sobering. And if you don't believe me, look some of this stuff up. I don't want to go into the minutia of it right now, but Reagan never balanced a budget. And he sent the country into mammoth amounts of debt. And his tax cuts never even came close to paying for themselves. That's one thing the Republicans like to tout when they hand out the massive tax cuts to the rich. Well, you know, they will stimulate business and they will pay for themselves. That's pure BS. You know, the end result of all of Reagan's massive spending, his spending splurge, was a huge increase in government debt. And like I said, we could go into the minutiae of this, and I've studied it quite a lot. But his tax cuts never paid for themselves. And that's always one of the things that the Republicans like to tell. You know, that's one of the crutches they use when they want to give, when the likes of Grover Norquist and all want to pass out another massive tax cut to their wealthy friends. Well, it'll be good for America, you know. It'll stimulate business. And when business is stimulated, why, it's so good for everybody. It trickles down. Yeah, it trickles down, all right. Doesn't trickle very far, does it? Just looking at my notes here. And, you know, speaking about trickling down, and just in case you weren't aware, during this wonderful Bush administration that we're suffering through, many of you have discovered by now that your paycheck hasn't grown at all during the Bush boom. Unless you're making $400,000 a year or more, and I doubt very many of my listeners are making $400,000 a year or more. And if you don't believe me, how about the Bureau of Labor Statistics? According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median wage with inflation-adjusted weekly pay for the worker in the middle of the wage distribution has risen a cumulative total of just over 0.9%. Folks, 0.9%. The weekly pay has increased 0.9% over the 7 years. This is a cumulative total of 7 years. Average just over 0.1% per year increase in your wages, accounting for inflation and all. And the 7 years ending in the first quarter of 2007, that's an especially disturbing development in a period of accelerating productivity growth. It's very much at odds with the long-standing conclusion economic theory and experience. And that means in the 6+ years Bush has been president, your wages have grown a cumulative total of 0.9%, less than 1% wage growth in 6 years. Amazing. You know, a lot of people think this is some sort of a surprising development in light of the productivity growth that the right-wingers are always talking about. Oh, our productivity as Americans is way up. But, you know, I think that when you start talking about productivity and talk about it in the same breath as American workers' pay, the productivity is largely a red herring. Yeah, we're more productive. And all the internet technology enabled gobbledygook allows us to work from our Blackberries and our cell phones and our computers and whatnot. But are we really more productive, or are we literally working on our own time? Not the time that we're paid for. How many people? And you all know somebody like this. I certainly do, and I do it myself. How many people spend extra time on their Blackberry or their laptop working hard about something at home before dinner or during a commute home in many cases? That's no excuse for the abysmal wage growth of the Bush era. I think it was Ronald Reagan that started that old story, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am on that. But are you better off now than you were when this administration started? And I don't have any figures at hand at the moment to talk about that. I should have looked that up. But I would be willing to bet my paycheck, as paltry as it is, and it's not as non-existent, I guess, as it is on this program. But I'd be willing to bet quite a little bit, if I had it, that, it's just not working out for the average wage earner. That's all there is to it. There are far, far more people who are worse off now than they were at the start of the Bush administration. Oh, to be sure, there are lots of people in the upper 10%, most especially in the upper 5%, that are making tons more than they did before the Bush administration and before the Reagan trickle-down thing started and the conservative movement to cut all their taxes. Yeah, the wealth has flowed upwards. Hasn't trickled down. It's come from the backs of the working men and women of the United States, and it has flowed directly upward into the pockets of the millionaires and the billionaires in this country. I am not saying that those people don't deserve to make wealth, a lot of wealth. You take the chance, you have a company, you take all the risk and so forth that go with it, you deserve to make a lot of money if it's successful. You do not deserve to make hundreds of times more than the man working for you makes. I think in the early 80s, I'm quoting these figures off my head. I don't have them written down here, but I think in the early 80s, you will find that the average CEO was making about 20 times what his production line worker was making. Now it's something like 400 times. Is that the way it ought to be in this country? Is that the way it should be? Is the distribution of wealth in any way, shape, or form fair? I submit to you that it is not. The rich very definitely are getting richer, and the poor most definitely are getting poorer. And unfortunately, a group that is getting poorer by the day and by design by these neoconservatives is the great middle class. The great middle class that was used to sending their kids to college. You know the old saying, a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage and all that. Opportunity, a chance to get ahead, a chance for their children to go to the university and improve themselves. This is going to be the first generation in a long time where the middle class is leaving it for the future in worse shape than when they found it with their particular income group. The labor movement is all but dead in this country. I think you'll find that most people working for labor unions in this country right now are not the big wage earners they used to be. United Auto Workers, the Steel Workers Union, been pretty much neutered. Don't have any real political clout like they used to. Their numbers are ever shrinking. It's a sad story. It really is. We're going to pause for a little break right now. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Boxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Boxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
This is Pete Seeger. What country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions. Fortunately, our Constitution has a remedy. It's called impeachment. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Guy James back with you. That message from Billy Shears, music director for the Guy James Show. Billy's a busy guy. Welcome. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. You know, we were talking about how the great middle class is going by the wayside before the break. And I don't think anybody will dispute that. Is there anybody listening that wants to dispute that? I doubt it. You know, the great ownership society. Remember how Bush bragged early on in his administration about how home ownership is up higher than it's ever been? And over the, well, let me tell you something. It's not looking so good. And a lot of people that own those homes don't own them anymore. And are more having them taken away from them every single day. Home prices are expected to finish down for the year, the National Association of Realtors said Tuesday, which would mark the first drop since the group started tracking values in 1968. 39 years ago they started. This is the first time home prices are going to go down for the year. The National Association of Realtors projects a 1% decline in the median price of an existing single-family home to $219,800. The group, in a forecast made a month ago, had previously been expecting a 0.7% decline. Prior to that, it had expected a gain of 1.2%. And by the way, home sales are expected to drop as well. The number of home sales is expected to dip from 6.48 million in 2006 to 6.2 million to 9 million in 2007, a drop of 2.7%. You know, the old two economies story. Which economy are you a member of? The alternative view is that the U.S. is operating two economies, and a lot of people think so. I certainly think so. One is the financiers economy, where hedge funds and banks and brokers They're literally churning money. They create and then follow trends in the hottest markets of the moment and take fees off of each transaction. There's enormous properties. There are profits being made off of that type of economy. Enormous profits. Which is the source and the beneficiary of asset inflation and bubbles. And the other economy consists of 97% of everybody else working everyday jobs with shrinking salaries compared to inflation, higher costs for weaker benefits, and little job security. These people have just seen their housing cushions shrink a bit, and we talked about that, and they're already wary of the stock market after the NASDAQ crash. They don't have the money to chase after high-end, high-priced equities. There are two economies in this country. Which one are you in? I know which one I'm in. I do know which one most of my listeners are in. And it's not pretty. One economy for the upper 1%, 5%, whatever it happens to be there at the top, and another one for the rest of us. Sad but true. The ownership society. A lot of people making a lot of money right now off of other people's woes in the real estate market. Automobile market, people having cars repossessed, homes repossessed. That's the nature of the beast. That's how it works. But it is sad. Very sad. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And I'd like to ask the question, and I wonder if anybody has a good answer. There are a lot of answers, especially from the energy companies. Why is it that oil dropped about $5 a barrel in the last 10 days, but gas has gone up? Oh, I know. You're going to give me that refinery story. I don't want to hear the refinery story. It's so much BS, and everybody knows that. Oh, there are a few suckers that swallow it. But yes, oil has gone down about $5 a barrel in the last 10 days or so, 9, 10 days. And gas is going up. Odd situation, don't you think? I think so. We're going to pause for a quick break. Going to get a hold of our guests for today. And we will be back in just a moment or two.
I could smile for a while. Then I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight. When you stopped to say hello, you wished me well. You couldn't tell that
can
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thank you for joining us today. We're always happy to have each and every one of you along with us. And as promised, I promised that Robert Borsage would be with us today to talk about the his endeavors as an activist and as co-director of the Campaign for America's Future. Robert, are you with us?
I am.
Hey,
how
so
are you?
Very, very good today, and I assume you're in Washington getting ready for the big conference that's coming up.
Right, about 1 month from now, the 18th, 19th, and 20th of June, will be the Take Back America Conference. There'll be over 2,000 progressives gathering to talk about where we've been and where we're going, what we're building over the next period of time.
And what's the purpose of a big conference like this? You have a couple of thousand people come in. I was there last year and planning on being there again this year. A couple of thousand people come in. We have a radio row. You're preaching to the choir, but why are you preaching of the choir, and what do you expect of them when the conference is over?
Well, I think a number of things happen at these conferences. One is we try to bring the different tribes of the progressive community together. So there'll be Move On activists, there'll be union activists, there'll be U.S. Action and ACORN and community activists, there'll be the hip-hop generation and environmentalists. We want them to get to know each other and to rub shoulders and to understand that they have a common thrust in the world. Then we lay out the big ideas about where we're going over the next period of time. What are the issues that are emerging, what we're fighting about? Obviously, you're going to hear about Iraq, but you're going to also hear about the broader question of a challenge to U.S. security policy. You're going to hear about the failed economic policies of Bush, but also what the elements of a progressive alternative are. And in doing that, we elevate the new and emerging leaders that are driving these arguments. So one feature this year, for example, we're going to take the populist senators that have just been elected, Brown from Ohio and Sanders from Vermont and Webb from Virginia and Tester from Montana and Klobuchar from Minnesota, and they're going to sit together on a platform and talk about the new politics that they represent. And I think you'll see they represent a very different progressive politics that's emerging. So we expect people to meet one another, to share and strategize together, to see the leaders that are emerging and the fights that are emerging that we're going to be waging over the next year. We obviously will invite the presidential candidates to come and give a populist economic speech and let people take a good look at who they like. We put a real presence in Washington so that the Washington community understands just the scope and the strength of the progressive movement that's building.
I love it when you use the word tribe, and it's both a bane and it's a bane and a curse for the Democratic Party. It's one of our strengths and it's one of our weaknesses. It's great to have everybody under the tent and bring all the tribes together, but we progressive, we liberals, we Democrats, we're known for fighting it out and not being a good cohesive unit at times. And it appears that that's what you're after here, to try to be the glue that puts some of these things together.
Yeah, and I think we're at this historic hinge where we've had now a clear failure of conservatism for the last 6 years and largely for the last 25 years.
No question.
Conservatives have had their way. And you can see in all of Bush's signature failures in Iraq and Katrina and the economy and privatizing Social Security and the attempt to interfere in Terry Schiavo's tragedies, et cetera, et cetera. You can go down the list, the poisoning of our food. You can see the ideas, the policies, and the priorities of conservatives at work. And the public now increasingly gets that and has turned their back on it. So now is the moment when we need a big vision about a different direction and some bold ideas about our future. The country really is looking for it, and I think our progressive movement is going to be the source of it.
The Ronald Reagan, the Gipper movement, of course, they're going to ride that horse this year as much as they can. They've already given evidence of it at their debate, I guess we call it, recently, and they are going to try and run that.
Yeah,
oh, it was, and I think that horse is not going to make it to the finish line. I think that the average Republican, not your fat cats, but I think your average Republican that expected so much from this conservative movement has been so disappointed that I think they'll be leaving the fold in droves this time. Do you?
Well, I think it seems to be happening in the polling, and it seems to be happening in terms of the popularity of the word conservative itself, which has tumbled over the last 6 years. I mean, it's pretty inescapable. You know, conservatives are now bailing out on Bush and pretending that he really was a closet, big-spending liberal who didn't know how to use military force. But the fact is they were in power. They controlled everything, the House, the Senate, the presidency. It was their ideologues that drove the policy, their political strategy that drove the politics. And what we've got is the catastrophes, really, of the Bush years, and the responsibility is inescapable. And I think we have to argue that case constantly and not let them escape responsibility for what they have wrought. But they certainly have a lot to be accountable for.
Well, and you hear the blame being passed around now. You hear the hardcore neocons saying, well, you know, it was Bush's cronyism. It was his incompetence. It was the corruption. It was this. It was that. But it's my feeling that it was the basic idea of this neoconservative movement all along that's the real problem.
Absolutely. You can trace it back to Reagan. You know, many of Bush's signature failures were exactly mirrored in Reagan, from top-end tax cuts and the growth of inequality to a trade policy that wiped out American manufacturing and put pressure on wages to a unilateral kind of imperial presidency that waged foolish wars, in Reagan's case, covert wars abroad. And spurned allies and international law of the United Nations, leaving the United States more less secure and more loathed. I mean, all of those things Reagan did as well as Bush. And so these are themes, not simply accidents. We just did a conference on the failure of conservatism in Washington. You can go to our website and see it, www.ourfuture.org, O-U-R-future.org. And one of our themes in it was to take a look at these catastrophes and to trace them back to the ideas and the conservative ideologues and the think tanks that are their source.
How do we get them to well, you know, the myth about the Reagan myth is out there, and
yeah.
and it's a very powerful myth. And, you know, he's rated as what, the second best president ever by most Republicans, right behind Honest Abe, I think. How do we get him to accept the actual truth about Ronald Reagan without offending them? I guess we're going to have to offend them. I did in the first half hour of this show, I'm sure. But they're living, they're feeding off the myth of the Ronald Reagan years, and so much of it is just not reality.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you've got to wage that battle and you've got to argue it out. You know, one of the reasons Reagan has such a good press now is that conservatives set out to deify him after his death and name every damn airport and road auditorium in the country after him. And the reality, when Reagan left office, you know, the last 2 years of his administration were consumed with the scandals of Iran-Contra and the question about whether the Congress was actually going to have to impeach him or not. And the defense of his own people was that he was incompetent and out of touch and really wasn't paying attention, and so don't blame him. And he left with not exactly the highest popularity in the world, so... at some point, you've got to go back and look at the truth at what happened in those things. But the thing I'm struck about this era, this 25-year era of conservatism, is we've really largely followed their economics and we've largely followed their foreign policy. And we have a country now that is more unequal, with more pressure on the poor and the middle class. We have an economy that's now more dependent on the kindness of strangers, particularly Chinese and Japanese central bankers. We have the most powerful military in the world, and yet we are less secure than we were at the beginning of that era. This is a real failure, and we've got to argue this case.
Well, you live in Washington. You're around there all the time. Do people like the old drown the government in the bathtub guy, Grover Norquist?
Grover Norquist, right.
Do they still hold sway in the Mayflower Hotel in the morning, holding court, and everybody listening with fascination and awe at what they say, or is this something that's dying out?
Well, they're still very well funded, and their think tanks are well funded, and their activists like Grover are well funded. So they're still having the press conferences in the most lavish hotels of Washington. But there's no question that they are, on the one hand, shooting each other because they're trying to avoid responsibility for the disasters that have happened. And on the other, they're on the defensive. They are not as powerful and certainly not the place that's going to define our future.
How do we get the media to be accountable now? I've noticed a slight turn and a little bit of them holding people accountable for their actions now, but the media hasn't done their part over the past few years, I don't think.
No question. And I think this is, you know, this too is trench warfare. Conservatives just pounded on the mainstream media for years and then invented their own mechanisms from Limbaugh to Fox News to the Wall Street Journal editorial page to the Washington Times, you know, produced by the Moonies, so that they could speak their own message. And I think we have to do both of those things, walk on both those legs. You've got the bloggers now have taken it on themselves to try to challenge a lot of the media lies and laziness, really, or the willingness to just repeat official statements without investigating them. And that's got to keep going on, and then we've got to increasingly develop our own outlets like this show and others around the country so that people can hear the real deal straight.
Well, that's something we work on every day, and many shows like ours. It's a big obstacle to overcome since the loss of the Fairness Doctrine, and the right wingers have been able to dig their heels in and amass huge audiences over the past couple of decades, and we're behind in that category, and I hope we can catch up. We're certainly trying.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is if you look at where people are, you know, there's the partisans on both sides, but the great bulk of people are now have turned their back on Bush. They think this is a failure. They want out of Iraq. They want a different economic course, and they are looking for a different set of answers. And so it's at this point when we have a real opportunity both to get their attention. It's a teachable moment. And to engage them in a process of making a future that's much better than what we've just experienced.
Well, and we were talking before you came on with us today that to steal one of their own phrases, I don't think there's ever been a better time, a more appropriate time to ask, are you better off now than you were 6 or 7 years ago? And I think the answer from a huge majority of Americans has to be no, we are not.
Right, and after Iraq, and after, which is the worst foreign policy debacle in our history, after these trade deficits and their effects on jobs and wages, which have racked up the worst foreign trade deficits in the history of time, after the top-end tax cuts that have recreated Gilded Age inequality and real pressures on middle-class wages, after the broken health system, after Katrina, is there any conceivable reason why you would trust conservatives with this government again?
I can't think of one. I'm as partisan, I suppose, as you can get, but I'm also trying to use my brain, and I certainly can't think of one. We were discussing yesterday, asking callers to give us one lasting benefit for all Americans that that their party has given us in the last few decades, and we couldn't come up with anything. Nothing. That's a sad testament.
No, it's a stunning set of ideas that really got the world wrong, and as the result, they took America's great strengths and the great strengths of this people, and they largely squandered them, and allowed a very few people to reap the benefits, while the rest of us reaped the whirlwind. And we've got to turn that around, and now we have the opportunity to do it. And that's what's going to be exciting at this Take Back America conference. You're going to see an amazing amount of energy. You're going to see new leaders, new ideas, and people looking forward to creating a very different future.
Well, you know, I've known Sherrod Brown for a while now. I'm a former Buckeye, and I had the good fortune to meet with and talk to Jim Webb and John Tester this past spring. I am excited about those guys sitting down together and explaining all this to people at the conference. That's a heck of a group right there.
That's amazing. I tell you, you know, when freshman senators come to the Senate, they put them in what is essentially a trailer park on the inner courtyard of the Russell Building, where they got two trailers that they patched together, and they connect with a red carpet, and they wait for the offices to get repainted and for senators to shuffle into their new offices. And of course, the freshmen are the last ones to get their offices because they do it by longevity. And so you walked in this year to that trailer park, and on one end was Sherrod Brown from Ohio, and on the other end was Jim Webb from Virginia, and across the hall was Amy Klobuchar, and across the hall was Bernie Sanders, and down the way was John Tester. And I can tell you, in 30 years in Washington, there has never been a populist group of senators elected at the same time, coming with real critical mass to challenge what we're doing in our country. So it's enormously exciting.
It's very exciting. I know they didn't like it all that well. at least Sherrod Brown's office let me know many times that they were sick of the trailers, but I think they're out of it now and ready to roll. Bob, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. We will be talking quite a little bit about the conference coming up for the next month. We're looking forward to it. And again, the website for where you can check the conference out?
You can register right on the web at ourfuture.org, OURfuture.org. I recommend it. And you'll also see our new blog there, our new webpage called The Big Con, looking at the failure of conservatives over the last 25 years.
Well, it's going to be an exciting time, and anybody living in that area or even a day's commute or whatever you can do to get there, I think you should. And, Bob, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Look forward to seeing you there.
Bye now. It's going to be a great conference. It certainly was last year. It was the best one of those that I've ever been to. I've attended quite a few of them over the years, and I have to tell you that the Take Back America conference last year was it was just flat amazing. It really was. We're going to pause for a quick break right now, and we'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable. And I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
We are not helpless. We are men. What lies between us, it can be set aside and ended. Every day we learn more how to hate. Shut the door, and then we tell ourselves we can't relate. Only to the ones who are the same. Yet even they are different, and ever so they shall remain. All our strangers, all our friends, all our brothers. Open up, my friend, and learn to hear. For in this life, it has nothing it should be. If you cannot let yourself know,
866-546-5254. Join us here on the Guy James Show. Get your 2 cents worth in. We'll listen to you. Yes, we will. Along with our audience. So glad to have all of you along with us. Great to talk to Robert Borisage. You got a chance to talk to him at Link last year. And when we did the show from the Take Back America Conference, that's at the Washington Hilton. By the way, for as a historical note, that's the place, if you remember, that Ronald Reagan got shot right out in front of there. Yes, it is. And Press Secretary Brady and all that happened right there in front of the Washington Hilton. It's up in the DuPont Circle area, one a beautiful area of Washington, D.C., not far from Embassy Row, and just a nice area. So we look forward to that once again and look forward to having some time there visiting with our radio friends and others. Always a good time. It's kind of a sad note that some of you may have seen in the news today. I just ran across it right before the program today. Tammy Faye Messner, whom most of us remember as Tammy Faye Baker. She's been fighting cancer, and they've stopped the treatments on her, which is a very sad thing. I guess she's down to about 65 pounds and just doesn't want to go on with the treatments, and it doesn't look good. I always thought that she was a sad and perhaps pathetic character. And I mean character in her case in the nicest of ways. I really do. I thought that her phony baloney husband, Jim Baker, was doing all this corruption behind her back, and she probably didn't know a thing about it, and she was unwilling participant in the whole mess. But anyway, it appears that she's in terrible trouble health-wise and down to 65 pounds and, known. And you know, it's such a great sense of humor the woman had. As you well know, on Saturday Night Live, and as so many people did a parody of her with her makeup. She loved her makeup and her singing and so forth, which certainly wasn't the best. But she always had a great sense of humor about all that. And lest I sound like I'm an old Jim Baker, Tammy Faye fan, I'm not. I just I think that bears mentioning that this woman is in terrible health trouble, and we send our best wishes, and I know everybody does. And it's always sad to see somebody stricken with cancer like this and not be able to beat it. So many people have beaten it, and well, it's life. It's life. Coming up to the top of the hour here in just a few minutes, 866. I don't want to get started on anything real important before the top of the hour. I see Bush made a total ass of himself, and doesn't don't the British know it? With the Queen. I got this from the BBC, and I'll just read a little bit of it to you from the BBC. It said, I've seen George Bush fumble for grammar, cringe in front of the cameras, and shrug off insults from world leaders. I've seen him joust gamely with opponents and stare down enemies with a cold eye, but I have never, ever seen the commander-in-chief of the mightiest nation on earth look utterly terrified. This week, an elderly lady, who's at least a head smaller than the president and who, by all accounts, has never harmed a fly, achieved unwittingly what Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, and Nancy Pelosi have all tried and failed to do, and that's reduced George Walker Bush to a quivering mass, make his lower lip tremble, I promise you, I saw it with my own eyes, says this reporter from the BBC, and make him blush to the roots of his Texas rind. Yes, the 43rd president of the United States was smitten by Her Britannic Majesty, Queen Elizabeth II. The endearing thing about George Bush is that his body language and the spoken variety both betray his true emotions at every turn. And at Monday night state dinner, the first white tie event in the Bush White House, a pair of lacquered black shoes could be seen virtually tap dancing with jitters on the red carpet next to the royal footwear. Her Majesty was not amused by President Bush's gaffe about the many times she's visited, and the wink. Then there was George Bush's hesitant, should I sit or should I stand, toast, which left the Queen on her feet, sipping her Riesling all by herself. The most memorable gaffe had been committed earlier in the day when the president almost implied that the queen was 200 years older than her current age by thanking her for attending America's bicentennial celebrations in 1776. He corrected himself mid-date and did what he often does in sticky circumstances. He winked, smiled, and lunged for recovery. The queen was heard to mutter, "Wrong year." The president responded with disarming honesty. The queen had given him a look that only a mother could give a child, he told his guest in the world under the glorious Washington May sky. "Call me churlish, but I thought this was a charming escape from royal protocol Armageddon." To my knowledge, no reigning queen of England had ever been winked at. The first Elizabeth would surely have had George Bush's guts for garters. This one responded with deadpan aloofness. Her Majesty was not amused. There wasn't even a flicker of a smile, and the stiff upper lip of the House of Windsor remained resolutely stiff in the land of the free. Well, a story about Queenie. As you know, I hold no reverence for the crown. I don't understand what all the falderal is about when the royalty comes here. I really don't get it. As one whose ancestors fled England in 1685 from the royalty in the Church of England, I have utter contempt for royalty, the very idea that someone walks around thinking that they're better than everybody else because of their blue blood is offensive to me. And I really don't understand. I really don't. I don't understand why people are awestruck and all that about the queen when she comes here and when they go over there. I don't understand that any more than I understand the Paris Hilton thing. Really, I'm not kidding. I've had people look at me when I said that and said, "Oh, you can't mean that about the queen." Yes, I do. Oh, I do. She's a member of a family that think they're better than everybody else. And at one time acted like, well, they still act like it, and they have immense wealth that they've gotten off the backs of the British people. Somebody explain that one to me. I don't get it, and I never will. I guess I'm a true liberal. Don't want anybody telling me that they're better than I am. Oh, well. I don't want to bow to anybody. I don't want anybody giving me a glove-encased hand because he doesn't want to touch my hand. Oh. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to be back right after the news, and I expect you to be here.
This is the Quality News Network. Vice President Dick Cheney made an unannounced stop in Baghdad today and met with Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. Some officials view Cheney's unscheduled visit as an attempt to press the Iraqi leader to produce more results in the area of unity among Iraqi parliament members. Cheney is in the Middle East to meet with the leaders of the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan to discuss the stabilization of Iraq and the minimalization of Iran. More violence in Iraq. A truck bomb exploded this morning in the Kurdish region of northern Iraq. At least 14 people were killed, 80 were wounded. In Los Angeles, a wildfire is burning in historic Griffith Park, threatening the newly remodeled observatory, the city zoo, and many expensive homes. At least 600 acres have burned and 300 residents evacuated. Firefighters do have 40% of the blaze contained, and investigators still search for the cause. In Nigeria, four American oil workers were abducted by rebels today from a construction barge in the Niger Delta. Yesterday, militants blew up three major oil pipelines. In 2005, Nigeria was the world's sixth largest oil exporter, but recent clashes with rebels and a rash of kidnappings have cut Nigeria's daily oil production by 500,000 barrels a day. In the UK this morning, Scotland Yard arrested four more suspects tied to the 2005 train and bus bombings. Police say three men were arrested and charged with conspiracy, as well as the widow of one of the suicide bombers. The July 7th attacks killed 52 people on three London commuter trains and a bus. Afghan officials say NATO forces have killed at least 20 civilians in an airstrike last night in southern Afghanistan. A soldier in the U.S.-led NATO coalition was also killed. Last week, demonstrations were held throughout the country protesting civilian casualties in the NATO raids against the Taliban. Pope Benedict is visiting Latin America, where he has criticized the legalization of abortion. The measure, which would allow abortions for the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, was denounced by the pontiff, saying the Mexico City politicians who passed the bill should no longer receive communion. The pope will be in the region until May 14th. In Florida, 8 former prison guards have been arrested for abusing inmates at a minimum security prison in the Everglades. The men are accused of sexually and physically abusing prisoners, as well as extorting money from them and their families. The facilities warden and the assistant warden have lost their jobs over the scandal. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up next, science and business.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Spitting 140 miles off the U.S. southeastern coast, the first named storm of the Atlantic hurricane season arrived 3 weeks before the official start of the storm season. Andrea, a subtropical storm which has sustained winds near 45 miles per hour, is weaker than the usual tropical storm or hurricane, but has similar characteristics. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick is asking the state legislature to invest $1 billion in the next decade in biotechnology industry. The investment would challenge California's bid to become the nation's leader in stem cell research. Farmed fish, like hogs and chicken, have been fed food contaminated with the same poisonous chemicals that led to the recall of hundreds of brands of pet food. Federal health officials say the fish, poultry, and pork involved is probably safe to eat. The Walt Disney Company posted a 27% jump in quarterly profits, exceeding Wall Street expectations. Net income was $931 million on revenues topping $8 billion. The company credited foreign sales of television shows and advertising revenues from ESPN. Cisco Systems narrowly beat Wall Street expectations today by announcing a 34% increase in quarterly profits. The San Jose-based company posted a net income of $1.87 billion. And right now, light sweet crude is trading at $61.17 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is up 23, the NASDAQ is down 5, and the S&P 500 is down 1. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe?
Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for being with us here in the Guy James Show this afternoon. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network and big supporter of all the programs here on our network. The best doggone progressive liberal network. Jeff Allen Wolf, Bob Kincaid, John Fox, Dr. Bill, Mark Levine. Hey, we got a great lineup. And you can tune in all day long and all evening and end up with some great programming. The facts, the truth on just about every issue that you can name that's germane to the situation of all Americans today. And it's a great place to listen here on the Head On Radio Network. And we hope you'll make it a habit and tell your friends. Doggone it, call up one of your friends right now and tell them, hey, join in over at the Head On Radio Network. We all have to do our part and grow the programs exponentially here. Just every day we should be doubling our audience every day. Do want to remind everybody that tomorrow Cindy Sheehan will be our guest here on the Guy James Show, and on Tuesday Medea Benjamin of Code Pink will be our guest on Tuesday. So we'll look forward to that. During the news, we got a tropical storm. What would the guy say? The characteristics are the same. Well, of course they're the same. You got wind, and I don't know. I didn't understand the statement. He said, well, the characteristics are the same. We're not even in hurricane season yet, and we're getting a tropical storm already? This is not fair. All the insurance companies, they like it when we have these near misses. See, they can jack up the rates even more and not have to pay anything out. So the more fear that they put out, you know, I actually know people that own their homes free and clear that don't have a whole lot except their home that are actually gone without insurance here in Southwest Florida right now because they can't afford insurance. Tough situation. Hey, you can join us at 866-546-5254, and while we're talking about phones, let's go to the phones right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Phil up in Daytona Beach. How are you
today? Hiya, Phil. Good.
Oh, great. It was. I'm glad you're talking about the unions and what they've done, and you know, I think we can tie labor and our jobs disappearing and all that directly into this this occupation of Iraq, you know, and wow, you've got some more great guests coming up too. Fantastic.
Oh yeah, well, we're working hard on that. You know, a lot of people, Phil, don't understand it. Sometimes that can be very time consuming. Back and forth.
Tracking them down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I have Cindy and Medea's numbers, but some of the other ones is not so easy.
Well, I'm just great. Glad you're able to do it, you know. And yesterday with David Swanson, he is a real, real special person.
Well, he is. And you know, Phil, if we had a couple of hundred David Swansons, if we had a couple of hundred Medea Benjamins, if we had them out beating the bushes day in, day out, we'd make a lot more. Well, you know, people like yourself, you participate in a lot of activist activities.
Yes, and there you go. So we can get a couple hundred.
Yep, we certainly can, and we need to.
Well, there's a great video of the Code Pink. Folks go to codepinkalert.org and then look at their, you know, click on their YouTube videos right on their web page. And there's a real special video about 5 minutes long. It was done by the WashingtonPost.com of them in the halls of Congress. And I tell you, if you're not crying at the end of it, and it's just showing how, and once again, Guy, it's the women leading the way, you know.
Yeah.
They're the ones with the you know what's, you know. And it's inspiring, and it inspires others to get together. But what I did want to speak on, I don't know how many you got in the queue.
Go right ahead,
Reagan.
Phil. Go right ahead.
Reagan. You know, another thing about Reagan. You know, I've heard folks in the black community call him the godfather of crack babies. You know, we've got to remind people about Iran-Contra, you know, and this is all documented stuff too.
And he's a man that wouldn't even recognize AIDS. He wouldn't say it. He wouldn't say AIDS. He ignored it and knew about it all through his tenure and literally did nothing about it.
Yes, and they were a big part of the drug, bringing the drugs into the crack into America's cities, and the same people that were involved with Iran-Contra and in formulating death squads and, you know, stirring up, you know, quote, sectarian violence in Central America are the same guys that are over in Iraq. Negroponte, Elliot Abrams, they're actually the same people.
Absolutely. I mean? Absolutely. Recycle those criminals. That's what they've done.
And there's a program that these guys are really, really dangerous. And what's been going on with the threat to our country, you know, from enemies foreign and domestic, and I consider this crew domestic enemies to our country, they were I remember the Iran-Contra hearings where one guy was, you know, Oliver North was on the stand, and they asked him about a program where they could actually do away with the Constitution and just shut down the I don't know if I should mention it on air where people could look it up or Google it.
Sure.
Program called Rex 84. If you just go to Google and type in REX 84 and then start looking at the Military Commissions Act as well as the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act that were both passed October 1606, where martial law has now been granted to Bush. I think people really need to, you know, Iraq's one thing, the election fraud is another thing, but there's something really much bigger going on. And the reason why I call in and say I'm trying to sound the alarm.
Phil, people don't want to accept this. We can sit here and this is the problem, and I don't know how to overcome it. I guess just keep hammering away.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned Elliot Abrams, you mentioned John Negroponte. We should also mention Robert Gates in that whole business.
I mean, Robert Gates for sure.
He was known, if I remember this right, during the Iran-Contra thing. I'm pretty sure I've got it right that they called him the ultimate hear no evil, see no evil official during the Iran-Contra. And here he is, head of the Defense Department. How do we educate people? We keep talking about it, but as you well know, Phil, you go out and we could go out and talk to some right wingers this afternoon, you and I on the street, and they would deny all of this.
Yes, they will. And so screw them. What are they, 30% of the population? And then there might be what, Guy? I mean, we might have 30% of us who are in the know because we have the opportunity, whatever, to read all this stuff and get on the internet. And it's the 40% in between that we have to reach, the ones who are either just ignorant meaning not stupid, just ignorant meaning not informed, or willfully ignorant, which that takes a little bit more work.
They whitewash the history is what I mean. There were, I could be wrong in this, but I know I'm close. There were at least 11 convictions on Iran-Contra, and of course Bush Daddy pardoned a bunch of them.
Yep, the Christmas pardon, the Christmas gift, or whatever it was.
And yet here they are, come back again, and in positions of massive authority. We know they're criminals, and yet here they are as leaders in this country again.
Well, I do have a website, you know, it's called LoneLantern.org, and it goes into all kinds of things. And there's the, I don't know how much you've read up or spoken about the Security and Prosperity Partnership that Bush signed with Vincenzo Fox, and who's the guy from Canada in 05, where they're actually selling our country off to corporations, and
some of our highways being sold, some of our turnpikes being sold
without the consent, the informed consent of the American people, which some would legally, I guess, or at least morally consider this treason against the United States of America. So there's a website called StopTheNorthAmericanUnion.com, and I found an article on it that goes into those two acts that I mentioned earlier, the Military Commissions Act, where American people can get rounded up for being, American citizens for being considered an enemy combatant according to whatever criteria Bush decides applies, and habeas corpus is gone, so we could be put away and never heard from again without
forever.
Exactly, and this other bill that was signed in the back room with Duncan Hunter, John Warner, and all Cheney, you should see the photograph of it. Cheney's got a big old smile on his face in the photo as he's signing this. And this is the law that 50 governors across the country, well, maybe not Bush's brother, strongly objected to this law being signed, but you never heard about it on the news. Bush, the executive branch, can turn any state's National Guard on any people in any other state without governor's consent. And that's the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 that protected against that. People don't realize this is getting really weird, people, and you don't want to even look at it, but it's happening.
Phil, it's the old, if you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. It could never happen here.
Didn't that happen in Germany in 1933?
Yeah. How many million people there said, it could never happen here, and don't worry about it. This isn't serious. Mm-hmm.
Well, so I'm I appreciate you letting me call in, Guy, and the reason why, I like to call in and get these websites out on the airwaves here, and maybe folks will take a look at lonelantern.org or stopthenorthamericanunion.com, and then they inform somebody.
Well, education is what it's all about. You can read these websites. Maybe you'll agree with them. Maybe you don't. But at least get yourself educated and know the issues.
Exposure, yes.
That's right. Phil, thanks so much for calling. Good call.
Oh, thank you, Guy.
Yeah, bye now.
Bye now.
It is a crime. When you look at the likes, I mean, you take Negroponte, for example. There's a guy that's not allowed to go to several certain Central American countries. He's a criminal. And Elliot Abrams is a criminal. And we have a Secretary of Defense that served during the Iran-Contra. He was the Deputy CIA Director while the Iran-Contra operations were taking place. Are you going to tell me that the Deputy CIA Director, one Robert Gates, didn't know anything about the Iran-Contra illegalities that were taking place at the time? That's preposterous. I remember he said, I was trying to learn the ropes while this was going on. Uh-huh. It's like that scene with the monkeys, hand over your ears, your eyes, and, hear no evil, see no evil. Fantastic. When I first saw that Junior Bush was recycling some of these people, I knew we were in it for a hell of a lot of trouble right then and there. I knew that. Did you see the, kind of switching gears a little bit, did you see the press conference in Kansas with Governor Sebelius, a Democratic governor of the great state of Kansas, and how the senators showed up, Brownback showed up, and the local congressman showed up, and it was nothing but an ad for FEMA. Did you see that? All they talked about, not the governor, of course, well, she thanked FEMA for coming, but Brownback and the local congressman there and so forth, the only thing they wanted to talk about was FEMA. How great is FEMA? Hey, boys, go peddle your papers to the folks down in southern Louisiana and southern Mississippi. You want to try and convince somebody how great FEMA is? Go down there and try and convince them, okay? You walk down the streets of the devastated New Orleans to this day and the southern coast of Mississippi to this day and convince those people that FEMA's done a great job for them. You send the politicians down there and look those people in the eye, and then you tell me, oh, yes, they're doing a great job. That was Bush goes out and lands in Kansas today and walks around. What the hell is he going to do for them? Got a lamer than lame duck president, a lame brain president. And I know presidents go to things like this, but why? Why would George Bush go out there and look at this devastation in Kansas? What is he going to do about it? Well, it turns out they're going to do a government's going to do a little less about it than they normally do sometimes. And I'm sure to try to do a little makeup here, they'll probably put forth every effort they possibly can. But you had the governor talking about how a lot of the equipment, the heavy trucks and so forth, was gone out of the state of Kansas because it was all over in Iraq and they couldn't get it back. And so after she says that, what happens? The White House blames her for the National Guard shortages. 60% of the National Guard equipment is gone. It's in Iraq. And to a sparsely populated state like Kansas, that's a lot, 60%. And they need that heavy equipment. And they may end up with all the right equipment. I don't know. But she mentions that, and the White House men, bam, they're right back after her. They remembered the finger-pointing. You remember Kathleen Blanco in Louisiana? It was her fault. Katrina was her fault. It wasn't the federal government. It was her fault because Brownie done a good job. Brownie, good job, Brownie. Good job, Brownie. It was that mayor, and it was that governor, Kathleen Blanco. They could have stopped a lot of this. The White House Press Secretary, Tony Snow, he blamed Kathleen Sebelius this morning for the shortage, saying he was not aware, let me quote him, he was not aware of any prior complaints by the governor about the equipment. He owes her an apology. He owes her a public apology, and I would hope that he's man enough to do it in public, perhaps at the press conference tomorrow. He said, and I quote, "And we're not aware of any prior complaints by the governor about the equipment." He said, if you don't request it, you're not going to get it. And as far as we know, the only thing the governor's requested are FM radios. There have been no requests to the National Guard for heavy equipment. We're eager to provide what Kansas needs, but again, there are also, you have to go through the process of making the request first. Oh, here we go again. We didn't dot all the T's and dot all the I's and cross all the T's, now didn't we? We didn't fill out the forms in triplicate and quadruple and all that, right? Is that what you're saying, Mr. Tony Snow? Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Tony Snow. You're full of it, as usual, on this subject. Absolutely full of it. On repeated occasions, Sebelius has made clear before this happened, notified the White House that Kansas was dangerously low on National Guard equipment. And let me just give you some examples, Mr. Snow. December 30th, 2005, Sebelius writes to Rumsfeld requesting new equipment. And she said the Guard was critical to responding to recent blizzards and floods in Kansas, yet its ability to respond to similar situations is being diminished by a lack of equipment, she wrote. And included in her letter was a list of equipment Kansas had lost to the Iraq War. That's courtesy of the Kansas City Star and the Topeka Capital Journal. On January 23rd, 2006, Sebelius personally urges Bush to increase National Guard funding. in a one-hour motorcade ride in Kansas with Bush. Sebelius expressed concern about a reduction of National Guard troop strength in its next budget. Bush assured her he was dealing with the shortages. Again, Kansas City Star, March 11, 2006. June 28, 2006, Sebelius sends Army Secretary a list of equipment lost in war. In a meeting with Army Secretary Francis Harvey, Sebelius told Harvey that the state had lost about $140 million in National Guard equipment to the Iraq War, and she sent him a list of the lost equipment. In September of 2006, she lobbies for replacement of National Guard equipment sent to Iraq. That a lot of it had been left in Iraq or damaged beyond repair. February 27th of this year, Sebelius pushes White House and Congress for more funding. Now the Guard needs Washington help, she said, in a press conference on Capitol Hill. The President and Congress need to step up to the plate and give our Guard members the support they deserve. At today's White House press briefing, a reporter confronted Snow about Sebelius' past request, and Snow simply replied, and what happened was she actually did get, there was not a formal request, but they had conversations. He also admitted that Sebelius did request more than FM radios. These people are without conscience. They're totally devoid of thought for their fellow man. Tony Snow owes Governor Sebelius of Kansas a big apology. He owes the people of the great state of Kansas a big apology. And it needs to be a public apology. But then again, she's a Republican governor. I mean, a Democratic governor in a Republican state. And I don't imagine her pleas are listened to in the present political climate of Washington, D.C. Now, if it would, had been Jeb Bush asking for things when he was still governor, it had been delivered with big pink ribbons on it. But Kansas, Democratic governor, how many electoral votes are there in Kansas anyway? You got Kansas City, you got Topeka, that's pretty much it. Wichita, don't worry about it. These people are absolutely unconscionable. Going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute. You can call the show at 866-546-5254. We'll be right back.
And now a message from the President of the United States. George W. Bush.
Good morning. For years, I have urged support of the war in Iraq, but that support has been dwindling. I have expressed many reasons to support this war so far: the weapons of mass destruction, the removal of Saddam Hussein, the liberating of Iraq, and, of course, my favorite, the dangers of emboldening the terrorists if we leave. But after all this, I'm down now to my last reason. We got to do this for the kids, for all the world's children who have come of age during this fine war and who now count on the war as part of the fabric of their daily lives, always being there for them. In the bedtime stories they crave about the troop movements in Baghdad and surging. When they get up early Saturday morning to watch their favorite Iraq war news programs with that bowl of cereal in their lap, what right do we have to take that away from them? They have fallen in love with this war. Their playground games of roadside bomb or massacre at the mosque, it wouldn't be the same anymore. But perhaps worst of all, the children of today could lose faith in their president, who will no longer be able to tell them exciting tales of the suicide bombers in the Baghdad marketplaces, or about the mass beheadings of the kidnapped victims. And that's just sad. I implore you, for the sake of our kids, join me in support of this war.
was recently in Europe, and despite all we've done for them and to them, they don't like us very much. They don't respect us at all. And I want to reply to their scorn in a song, which is the following. I like to say a few words in defense of our country. Those people aren't bad, nor are they mean. Now the leaders we have, while they're the worst that we've had, are hardly the worst this poor world has seen. Let's turn history's pages, shall we? Take the Caesars, for example. While the first few of them, they were sleeping with their sister, stashing little boys in swimming pools and burning down the city. One of them appointed his own horse to be consul of the empire. That's like vice president or something. That's not a very good example right now, is it? But here's one. Spanish Inquisition. That's a good one. Put people in a terrible position. I don't even like to think about it. Well, sometimes I like to think about it. Just a few words. Defense of our country. It's time at the top. Could be coming to an end. We don't want their love. Respect at this point's pretty much out of the question, but a time like these, we sure could use a friend. Hitler, Stalin, men who need no introduction. King Leopold of Belgium, that's right. Everyone thinks he's so great. Well, he owned the Congo. He tore it up, too. Took the diamonds, took the silver, took the gold. You know what he left him with? Malaria. You know, a president once said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Now it seems like we're supposed to be afraid. It's patriotic, in fact, color-coded. What are we supposed to be afraid of? Why being afraid? That's what terror means, doesn't it? That's what it used to mean. You know, it pisses me off a little that this Supreme Court's gonna outlive me. A couple young Italian fellas and a brother on the court now, too. But I defy you. Anywhere in the world to find me two Italians as tight ass as the two Italians we got. And as for the brother, well, Pluto's not a planet anymore either. The end of an empire is messy at best. And this empire's ending, like all the rest, like the Spanish Armada. Drift on the sea. We're adrift in the land of the brave and the home of the free. Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Randy Newman. Thank you for that, Randy. I like that piece. Hey, guys, so... Guy's got soul. He really does. Hey, let's head on over to the phone. Let's head on over to line two here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, hello, Guy. It's Teresa from Canada calling.
Hi, Teresa.
How are you?
Good.
I'm just calling to put my 2 cents worth in about the Tony Snow press conference.
Yes.
I saw a few minutes of it. It was about all I could take. But, like, aside from him lying about the governor not requesting the equipment and that.
I do so love your Canadian accent. A boat.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you.
But, like not only that, like, is Kansas, is that not Tornado Alley? Like,
oh, it certainly
they
is.
They would have known that ahead of time. Why would they leave them without equipment in the first place?
Why indeed?
Like, have they not seen The Wizard of Oz? think.
Yeah. You know, one thing that surprised me, I had an aunt and uncle, and I think I've mentioned this before, but they lived in Leavenworth, and not in the prison. In fact, he was assistant warden at the federal prison there. And they lived at 412 Pine Street, Leavenworth, Kansas, when I was a little girl, and a little guy, we used to go out there and visit all the time on the way west every year to visit relatives in California. We'd always stop at Leavenworth. And almost everybody in those days had one of those dugouts in their backyard where they had, you know, they dug a cellar and mounted the dirt up and had a door on. And I don't see those anymore. And I kind of wonder why people don't have them anymore, because they are fairly safe.
Yeah, I would think that.
Yeah.
I certainly would have one. But it just makes no sense. Like that with the Katrina thing as well, all the equipment's over in Iraq. Like the governor said, it wasn't the manpower she needed. It was the actual equipment, the heavy vehicles and all that.
Well, you wonder how many states how many of the guards in the states are stretched absolutely thin with equipment. I'm hearing that a lot of them are. That it'll take years to replenish their equipment.
If the governors start getting together, like I'm sure Tony Snow's comments didn't set well with many other governors in the state.
I should think not, Democrat or Republican. I should think they didn't set well at all. The governors sometimes are a little bit different politically, even though they're Republican. They're still governors, and they understand each other.
Yeah, and they're responsible more to their state.
Yes, they are.
But it's just the arrogance of his comment. If you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it.
Yeah, well, he's arrogant is a word that fits him well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's a perfect mix for this administration. I said that immediately when they picked him, that he's the perfect guy for them.
Yep. Dana Perino was fun while she lasted, but did you like her?
I tell you now, I got a real charge out of that girl. If ever anybody could be called a neophyte at what they do, gee.
And then her husband get arrested for not paying a ticket for walking his dog without a leash.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was CNN, I think, mentioned it.
Oh, no.
But he purposely didn't pay it. Like, I guess I'm a very important person. I'm not paying that.
Wow.
And so he just dodged them, and then all of a sudden he was told to present himself at the police station or he'd be arrested. So he went in with his tail between his legs.
Such is the village called Washington, D.C.
It's
the way it is. When DeLay got questioned at the airport about something one time, you know, about the government, he said, "I am the government."
No.
Well, you wonder how many times that gets said every day in that town.
And why do we still hear from him?
Oh, why? Why indeed do we hear from him? Please just go away. I never want to hear from him again. You know, convict him, put him in prison. I don't care what, I just don't want to see his face anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Such a nasty piece of work.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And then we got another commercial. Been a pretty much nonstop commercial here the past couple of days for Homeland Security. For stopping this dreaded, awful plot, excuse me while I try and go through this with a straight face, six guys from New Jersey and they've all been arrested, so, you know, breathe a sigh of relief, feel safe once again, you can unlock your doors and windows and so forth, and just take it easy, okay? Chill out a little bit. Because these six guys from New Jersey who were going to buy some guns, they were going to, and they were going to storm Fort Dix. Now, I don't know if these guys knew this or not, but there's a whole lot of guys over at Fort Dix that got a whole lot of guns. A lot of guns. Plenty of ammo, too. And the guys at Fort Dix, they kind of had an advantage over these guys from New Jersey that were going to buy some guns and storm Fort Dix, because the guys actually living at Fort Dix, they've had all this military training and stuff, you see. And thank the Lord, these guys have been caught and they've been locked up. Because they just could have devastated Fort Dix in just a moment's notice. You know, they could have just walked right through the gate, of course. These guys got to be absolute morons. the document charging him filed in federal court in Camden, New Jersey yesterday portrays an ambitious and cold-blooded but somewhat bungling cadre who hoped to kill at least 100 soldiers, but also drop training. Now, get this. They hoped to kill at least 100 soldiers, but also drop training videos off at a local store to be copied. And spoke openly to a Philadelphia police sergeant about obtaining maps of Fort Dix. Now, I could be wrong, but how seriously do you take some guys that drop off a training video at the local store and say, "Hey, here, copy, make me a few copies of this, will you? It's how to storm an army base and kill soldiers, and we need a couple copies of it." And then go talk to a Philadelphia police sergeant about getting some maps of Fort Dix. Said in March of 2006. An FBI informant established a relationship with one of these guys, believed to be in the videotape. And the informants convinced members of the group that they could help them obtain automatic weapons to use in their attack. Oh, and it said the training regimen included playing paintball. So, they drop off their jihadi videos at the local store to get them copied. They talk to the Philly cops and pretty much blow the whole deal. And after 17 months of planning, they're still trying to buy some weapons. And they practice for the whole thing by playing paintball. Oh, my. Does that remind you of this group they caught in Miami, what was it, a year, maybe 2 years ago? This pathetic group that they walled off half of the city over there and rounded up, I don't know what it was, six or seven guys who had bought some fatigues, and they were checking out terrorist groups wherever they could find somebody linked to one. They never did, but they needed money to buy shoes and weapons. They didn't have any shoes. And it was a big splash. Hey, look how good we're doing here. We're you know, here 3-4 miles away from catching these guys in Miami a couple of years ago. They're bragging about what a wonderful job they're doing protecting us. And just a couple of miles away is the port of Miami. And I don't know if you've seen the port of Miami, but it's huge. And there's thousands of containers sitting everywhere. It's right over by where the cruise ships, the Carnival Lines and all them take out the channel there. Just thousands and thousands of containers just sitting everywhere. They're only looking at, what was it, 2-3% of them? It could be dirty bombs and 20 of them or however many. And they're bragging, oh, we caught these guys that were, you know, planning this terrorist activity. Oh, boy. I don't know. Sometimes it makes you wonder. And also, I got it on good authority. You've heard of Monica Goodling, right? She's the gal that's going to testify with. They're going to give her immunity. She was the former aide to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Well, now it turns out that this same Monica Goodling was responsible for putting the drapes over the ample bosoms of the Art Deco statues in the Justice Department's Great Hall during the reign of John Ashcroft. The coverings were removed back in, 2005 or so. But it said that Monica Goodling is the one that complained and talked them into covering those. So what a great public service she has done. My, oh my. Well, we're going to pause for a break, and we shall return in a moment or two. maybe 3 moments. I'm not sure exactly, but we will be back. Make no mistake about that. Welcome back to the Guy James Show, and big thanks to Billy Shears, music director here at the Guy James Show. Yes, Billy Shears. Who else would you want for a music director? Huh? Of course. I want to thank, now and then we interject a little levity into the program. I have a good sense of humor. Some of you might not think so. It's a little dry, maybe. But Suzanne. Suzanne's really good at sending some funny stuff. About once a week I get some, I think she calls them brighteners. Always some fabulous jokes, and I get a big chuckle out of them. We have same kind of sense of humor, evidently. But she sends me this thing today, and perhaps some of you have seen it, and I just want to go over just for a couple of minutes. Spring classes for men at the Adult Learning Center. Says, no, due to the complexity and difficulty level of their contents, class sizes will be limited to 8 participants maximum. Class number 1. Now, you see, I think Suzanne and maybe some of the ladies have been spying on us. And by us, I mean we gentlemen. Class number 1, how to fill up ice cube trays, step by step, with a slide presentation. Meets for 4 weeks, Monday and Wednesday, for 2 hours, beginning at 7 p.m. Class number 2 for men. The toilet paper roll. Does it change itself? A roundtable discussion. It meets 2 weeks, Saturday, 12 o'clock for 2 hours. Class number three. Is it possible to urinate using the techniques of lifting the seat and avoiding the floor walls and nearby bathtub? Group practice meets 4 weeks, Saturdays, 10 p.m. for 2 hours. Class number four, fundamental differences between the laundry hamper and the floor. Pictures and explanatory graphics. This is great. Class number five, dinner dishes. Can they levitate and fly into the kitchen sink? Loss of identity, losing the remote to your significant others. They have a helpline support and support groups for that one. What are some of the other ones here? Oh, class number eight, health watch. Bringing her flowers is not harmful to your health. Class number 10, is it genetically impossible to sit quietly while she parallel parks? Well, these are cute. I like this. Class number 14, this is not one I need to learn. I know this one. Class number 14, the stove and oven. What is it and how is it used? Live demonstrations, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. at a location to be determined. Thank you, Suzanne, for sending those. I always get a big charge of what she sends. I really do. Funny stuff. As you know, they're still looking for a war czar to coordinate Iran and the Afghanistan wars. I sent in my application for that job, and I said I'd do it for $1 million a year, a generous expense account. Plus, I wanted the authority that if I saw it wasn't going well, I could pull the plug on the whole thing at any time, but I haven't heard back as of yet. But I thought I'd be a good war czar, because I'd just say, hey, that's it, no more war. Still searching for a war czar. And it does beg the question of who's been coordinating U.S. involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan for the last 4 years, now all of a sudden they need a war czar. Why would anybody willingly want to take a job in something that's as disastrous and as this mess we're in? Probably won't have any power to do what they really want to do, and then probably get fired or maybe forced to resign in just a few months when it's not going well. I don't know. Seems odd to me. When that first came out, I thought it was a joke that they were looking for a war czar, but they're not. And my admiration for Russ Feingold has increased once again. Russ is going to introduce a Iraq funding cutoff by March 31st, 2008. And let me quote him. He said, "With brave Americans fighting and dying for a failed policy in Iraq, members of Congress shouldn't delay action to end this misguided war for weeks or even months just for the sake of political comfort. That is why when the Senate takes up the Iraq supplemental plan, I plan to offer the Feingold Reid bill as an amendment to force the president to safely redeploy our troops by March 31st, 2008. At which point funding for the war would be cut off. In addition to Harry Reid's commitment to support the bill, several co-sponsors are already on board, and they include an impressive list. Such an impressive list that I think they can get this done. Senator Barbara Boxer, Chris Dodd, Tom Harkin, Ted Kennedy, John Kerry, Pat Leahy, Bernie Sanders, and Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. That's an impressive list. This legislation does include a few caveats that they say the right-wingers will probably ignore when they begin to attack it, so they want to point them out. Namely, that Feingold's bill will not cut off funding for the purpose of conducting targeted operations against members of Al-Qaeda and other international terrorist organizations. It will not cut off funding for the security of the United States infrastructure and personnel. And it will not cut off funding to train and equip Iraqi security services. Makes a lot of sense to me. And I wish Russ Feingold much success with this. And I hope they can gather even, who knows, maybe a few Republicans to go along with them on this. Because, folks, this entire situation of this war is getting totally out of hand, and we don't have time today on the program to talk about much of it. But right now, the Pentagon announced yesterday that 35,000 soldiers and 10 Army combat brigades will begin deploying to Iraq in August as replacements, making it possible to sustain the U.S. troops there until at least the end of this year. And there's some fantastic statements made in this. It said the new requirement of up to 15-month tours for active duty soldiers will allow the troop increase to last until spring, said General Raymond Odinero, who favors keeping experienced forces in place for now. And he said, what I'm trying to do, and this one blew me away, you know, we're talking about this surge. They said we're going to have all the information we need on it by September. That's the new target date, September, not April like it originally was, or May. But the general said, what I am trying to do is to get until April, and he's talking about April of 2008, so we can decide whether to keep it going or not. He said in an interview in Baghdad last week, are we making progress? If we're not making any progress, we need to change our strategy. If we're making progress, then we need to make a decision on whether we continue to surge. Now the generals on the ground are talking about keeping this surge going until next year, until April of next year. The politicos are talking about September now. They were originally talking about 90 days from January. Now they're talking about September. And his general saying they need to keep it going until at least April of next year? I don't think so. I think he's lost his mind. Well, guess we'll finish talking about it tomorrow, won't we? I do appreciate you being with us here today on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. It's always... always a pleasure to be with you each and every day. Don't forget, Cindy Sheehan's going to be with us tomorrow. Medea Benjamin on Tuesday. Do keep that in mind. Tell your friends. I know you'll want to hear from Cindy tomorrow. And Medea on Tuesday. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure and do let a couple of your friends know that you listen to the Guy James Show every day and encourage them to tune in to all the programs on the Head On Radio Network. Jeff and Bob and John Fox and Dr. Bill and Mark Levine. Everybody, thanks for being with us today on the Guy James Show. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.